The big question, could American exports help pull the economy back up?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good day to you. I'm Steve Chiotakis. The big question in just a moment. First, word this morning from the Labor Department. The number of people filing for unemployment for the first time fell by 27,000 to 451,000 last week. That's a much better report than was expected today. Good news also on the trade front. We learned the gap between how much the nation imports and exports has narrowed. The trade deficit for July fell for the month from the month before, from June, by nearly $7 billion. That comes on the heels of some of the best export numbers in 2 years. So that's got us asking this big question. If we're selling more stuff abroad again, could that pull us out of the downturn? Marketplace's Scott Tong is live with us from Washington to tell us what it all means. Good morning, Scott.
Hi, Steve.
So the deficit went down more than 10% compared to last month.
Yep.
Is this a surprise?
It fell more than a lot of economists expected. Americans bought fewer consumer goods and cars from abroad, so July imports fell about 2% to $196 billion. And the stuff we sent abroad, that is exports, they rose almost 2% to $153 billion. And as you say, that is one of the highest numbers in almost 2 years, Steve.
Now, Scott, economists watch exports pretty closely, and it's a priority for the president as well. Why are we doing so well?
Well, capital goods like machine tools are selling very well, and exports in general have looked good this year for the U.S. I spoke to Michael Hansen over at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. He thinks the trade picture in the future will depend more and more on the emerging economies.
China and emerging markets more generally are going to be growing sources of U.S. exports going forward. As China starts to develop more of a domestic market, that's likely to be long-run beneficial to U.S. manufacturers.
But, Scott, China still sells way more to us than we do to them. Is the deficit number still politically charged?
Oh, sure it is. And despite today's numbers, Congress next week is expected to hold at least one hearing on China's currency, which is supposed to be appreciating, but it hasn't done much yet.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong reporting from Washington. Scott, thanks.
You're welcome.
In Ireland, when Anglo-Irish Bank failed, it nearly bankrupted that nation. Now the Irish government says it has a plan to split the bank up. The BBC's Ben Shore reports from Brussels.
To put the failure of Anglo-Irish Bank into perspective, the Irish economy is worth about $210 billion a year. Keeping the bank afloat has already cost $25 billion, equivalent to over 10% of the nation's output. The bank made catastrophically bad home loans during Ireland's property boom. The global crash hit Ireland especially hard and forced the government to step in and take over. To try and stem the enormous losses, the government now plans to divide the Anglo-Irish Bank into two parts. A retail bank to handle customer deposits and a so-called bad bank, which will keep the bank's disastrous loans. Ireland's finance minister, Brian Lenehan, says this is the best option available.
Everybody saw what happened to the world economy when the Lehman's Bank was allowed to collapse. We don't want to do that to our economy, and no amount of argument about bailouts can obscure that.
The government acknowledges that some of the details remain to be worked out, but it's confident that international investors will give Ireland the time it needs for the bailout to be finalised. In Brussels, I'm the BBC's Ben Shaw for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. European stocks are higher at the moment, about 1% on average. Yesterday, the Dow tacked on 46 points, just under 0.5%, and it closed at 10,387.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, a mutual life insurance company owned by its members and policyholders. Learn more at massmutual.com/mutuality.
So a lot of people believe the housing market got us into this mess, and as more and more Americans have been laid off, office buildings have emptied out. And that's hit one profession pretty hard, architects. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson spent a couple of weeks traveling through the state of Tennessee for our series on how the recession and recovery are being felt in the heartland. And he starts off the series with this report.
Why couldn't you make me an architect? You know I always wanted to pretend that I was an architect.
Back in the boom real estate years of the 90s, Seinfeld's George Costanza wasn't the only person who dreamed of T-squares. But these days, after a severe collapse in both residential and commercial real estate, many in the business only have a part-time job. I met with Jason Gibson and Jennifer Atcher in a brand new brewery. It's in a Nashville neighborhood called The Gulch. About a decade ago, the city decided to transform this near-downtown area, fill it with condos, office buildings, restaurants, and shops.
There are, of the three major buildings, one is bankrupt at this point, one is about 65% full, and one is only about 25% full.
So we are right in the middle of boom and bust Nashville right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right.
And the bust hit home for these two.
We were both laid off the same day.
They're not the only ones. Since the peak in the summer of 08, the number of employed architects nationwide has dropped by 25%. For Jennifer Atcher, the layoff meant cutting out luxuries and getting a roommate. And for Jason Gibson, it meant putting aside plans to buy a house.
You just continue to rent and pay the bills. And that's the biggest difference, is really just living week to week, really, which is different than what I was used to with a paycheck coming in.
Architecture is a very difficult field to be in right now. Have you thought to yourself, I wish that I hadn't gone this route?
Well, it's interesting. You don't really realize how specific it is until you start to look at possibly going into other fields. But you do question yourself, and it's never evolving occupation. And I definitely think because of this recession, it's going to come out looking a little bit differently than it did when we went in.
Both Atcher and Gibson have been hired back as freelancers by their old firm. They get about half as much work as they used to. Unemployment covers the off weeks. They say they've gotten so used to their on-again, off-again jobs, it's become what they do. In Nashville, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
By the way, Jeremy asked everyone he met in Tennessee whether they're feeling a recovery. You can hear their responses. Give us an answer of your own in our special series, Signs of the Recovery, inside our website, marketplace.org. And finally, the Financial Times reports Kelley Blue Book has put itself up for sale. Kelley dates back to 1926, and potential suitors include AutoTrader.com, maybe an investment firm. The Times reports Kelley's valued at somewhere between $500 million to a billion dollars. Of course, that depends on the company's condition, whether excellent or fair, and if it has any dings or was in an accident, well, the price could really drop. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.